The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
South Florida was an epicenter of the foreclosure crisis and one of the first places in the country that will go underwater as the sea level continues to rise. So here we see financial crisis and environmental crisis coming together. And the idea of South Florida going underwater is not an if, it's more of a when, I hate to say. So we sent the Radio Hour's Stephen Valentino to Miami.
So I went to Miami and I wound up in this neighborhood called Brickell, which is sort of adjacent to downtown Miami and right on Biscayne Bay. So you have Biscayne Bay with this beautiful bluish green water facing Miami Beach, facing the port. There are enormous luxury condo buildings sort of on every block. If you look closely at each of the buildings, you can sort of pick out which real estate boom they were constructed in.
So like this Yacht City, I don't know the story behind that building, but my guess would be that was probably built two booms ago.
My tour guide in Brickell was Tom Hudson, who hosts a radio show called The Sunshine Economy on WLRN.
We're coming up on the Jade here.
Yeah.
Can you just describe sort of what
white
it looks
building,
like?
White building, lots of glass, it's kind of these sweeping balconies. This building was built in the last few years of the last housing boom in 2004, 2005. And condominiums here were selling for $700, $800, $900, $1 million. Within 2 years of that high watermark, you saw several dozen condominiums in this building fall into foreclosure or short sale status. And very soon you saw those same condominiums that had been selling for $1 million in 2005, in the summer of 2008, in the fall of 2008, were selling for half that price.
So you use the phrase high watermark to talk about, you know, the last real estate boom here. But isn't this building also facing another sort of imminent high watermark from climate change?
Absolutely, it is. There's Irma video in September of 2017 when Irma came in, where this entire space here is just flowing with water. And it gets up to about, I'm guessing, about maybe a foot and a half over where we're standing right now. So in the street, it's probably two and a half feet deep. They built it up to create a high spot here right on the bay so that the building itself can remain dry from those storm surges. But you're going to have to get a canoe or a kayak in order to have your valet parking.
Brickell is a place where we're already starting to see the realities of climate change. Sea levels are rising. Places like Miami are experiencing stronger storms and hurricanes. There are parts of Miami where water is sort of creeping up just on high tide days into the streets. And yet, as I'm standing here talking to Tom, there are cranes everywhere. Despite all of these realities of climate change, Brickell is experiencing tremendous growth. When you walk around Brickell, there's sort of this clanging machine noise that sort of follows you as you walk around the neighborhood because there is just so much stuff going on. I mean, it is one of the fastest growing neighborhoods in Miami.
Climate change and the threat of sea level rise, I have not seen any evidence that it is affecting property values in any real substantial way. I think among the reasons why that is the length of time that people are staying in their homes is less, 5 to 7 years on average before they sell. So you're operating ultimately under the greater fool theory. There's somebody who's more of a fool than I that'll pay a little bit more for this.
But isn't the greater fool theory what caused the housing crisis?
It certainly is part of it, yeah. Until you're the last fool.
Right.
In which case, then, you truly are, yeah.
Tom introduced me to this guy, Victor Roldan, who works in risk management for this company, RMS.
Hey, how are you?
Steven.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
Oh, good.
And what RMS does is they tell insurance companies whether or not something is a good bet. And Victor is particularly interested in Brickell because, you know, there's this looming threat of climate change and there's all this construction happening here.
Yeah, you want to see it? All right.
And as it turns out, he lives just up the street.
That's my building right there.
Okay, so just up the street there?
Yeah. I actually bought this place during the financial collapse.
Yes.
It was hard to find a bank, so you needed to put a lot of money down, so I had put all my savings to it, and I bought very cheap in a very beautiful place. Yes.
So how did you feel seeing all of that water come in from your living room window?
Well, yeah, the first when you see that is quite impressive. And then you start analyzing, making assessment of, all right. So we're in the business of transference risk. So we help companies how to transfer the risk. And that's what it's all about. You know, the builder here built this and then he makes some money, he transferred the risk to the owners. Now we're trying to transfer the risk to an insurance company. That's perhaps why you don't see like a major impact on this. It's, nobody's really worried because the risk is so distributed against many companies around the world.
I mean, this idea of transfer of risk, wasn't that sort of something that happened during the housing crisis?
Yeah, very similar.
Right, exactly. This idea that like, oh, we can write these mortgages and then we'll package them and sell them off to someone else and then...
Yes.
So what lessons do you draw from that in sort of applying?
Well, so this going to be a point where sea level is so high that the insurance companies are going to say, I'm not going to protect the mortgage. And then the owners like me, we have to go and find who's going to protect us. You know, at some point I say, okay, I will sell my apartment and move to higher ground as well. And let's see, somebody will pay for the property what I pay, you know?
So when you're thinking about moving for personal reasons and maybe for climate reasons, will it be a profitable investment?
It will be. It will be a profitable investment. Yes. Yeah. It will be a profitable investment.
So Victor is very sure that his apartment is going to lose value because of climate change. And so the plan is to sell it before that happens. A lot of people in Brickell are sort of following this model. And what that means is that at some point, a lot of people are going to be left with houses that might be underwater in terms of value, but will also be literally underwater.
I mean, when I was coming down here, I read a think tank report that said that by 2050, about $23 billion of real estate in Florida could be underwater.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how would that compare to the 2008 housing crisis?
It would be devastating. It would be cataclysmic for those homeowners and for the ripple effect that would take place. Because if you've got a $1 million property here, think of the property taxes that throws off to the county government, to the local school district, to the state government. And so if that value destruction hits because of rising seas, it's not just the property owner here at the Jade that's going to be impacted by it. It's the entire South Florida economy, by extension, the Florida economy, and conceivably by extension, the national economy. As Florida being the third most populous state, it is a place with great wealth, certainly, and generates a lot of federal tax revenue as it does for the state government.
So is it going to take for like a change in thinking here?
Yeah.
Is it going to take a signal from, say, the insurance industry to say,
yes,
we are not writing policies for buildings built two feet above the waterline?
I've contended for years that in order for any community, any industry, any neighborhood, any government, frankly, to take the threat of climate change seriously, it's going to take the financial community to put a price on it. be that either through more accurately priced flood insurance to higher cost of mortgage. I've heard financial professionals think about creating a kind of home mortgage that works similar to an auto loan. The moment you sign the paper for your car loan and drive that car off the lot, it begins to decrease in value. It's a wasting asset. Do we need to reconceive of our underlying concept of home ownership as an asset that is going to be devalued over time?
For homeowners like Victor and a lot of developers in South Florida, this model makes perfect sense. It may be a short-term model, but it is a model that works for them. And, you know, you can make a lot of money. I mean, if you time it right, you can make a lot of money.
Same thing here. And they have some incredible plans, build hotels over there. I mean, it's a beautiful place to live, you know?
But, like, with the projections of what's expected to happen here...
You transfer your risk. You build in 3 years, 4 or 5 years, and then you're out. You transfer your risk.
You transfer the risk, but at some point, someone is left the bag.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, it's like a pyramid scheme, you know? Who's the last one? You don't want to be the last one. Yes.
Stephen Valentino in Florida with Victor Roldan, a risk assessor. And we heard from Tom Hudson, who hosts a program called The Sunshine Economy for WLRN in Miami.